Yeah, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN Chicago. Now, listen. This is a big deal. Coming up, Tim Easton is going to join us. Wait till you hear Tim Easton. It's Live Music Thursday. Because we're doing, are we doing Live Music Friday tomorrow too? What time do we? What time is the Sox tomorrow? 7:10. They're back here in Chicago, right? Okay, so it's at 6 o'clock tomorrow. All right, good. We have Rostock coming up in the middle of July.
Nice.
And you're gonna stop and say, "What the hell's Rostock?" Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's gonna be a lot of like live music every day of the week.
Amazing.
Because it's the summer. And we're trying to have a little bit of fun. Because you know what's going to happen in the fall? These politicians will not shut up starting in the fall.
There'll be a lot of good stuff in the fall, too. You'll be fine.
We'll have bears.
Yeah.
We got all kinds of things for the fall to talk about. But we get, it's, I don't know. We got the Hawks back. We'll have all of that.
White Sox will be making a miracle run for that wild card spot.
That's possible.
Mark my words.
All right. Now, Richard Roper brought to you by Archideck of Chicagoland. I ask you this question, Mr. Roper. The loudest voice. This is highly anticipated and highly anticipated to be slammed immediately by the Fox Corporation and by the White House because this is a 12-part miniseries, limited series about Roger Ailes' life based on a book. Right?
Yes.
Called Loudest Voice.
Correct. Loudest Voice in the Room. They now are just calling it The Loudest Voice for the mini series on Showtime. I would say that you probably won't see Kilmeade and Ducey and Gutfriend or what's his name? Goodfella? What's the fella? The funny guy.
Yeah.
They probably won't be, might not be reviewing it or probably giving it some big thumbs down on the Fox News channel. So this is starring Russell Crowe as Roger Ailes, who is Roe, and a lot of the listeners, everybody knows, you know, started as a television producer all the way back to the Mike Douglas show, right? And then was a Nixon and I think Reagan advisor, campaign operative, and then got into the television side of things. And when Rupert Murdoch decided he was going to do the Fox News Channel in the mid-1990s, he hired Roger Ailes, right?
Roger Ailes had already done. He had put on... another cable news channel, America on the Air or something like that.
Air America,
right.
And then was he with CNBC, the version that was going to become, I believe, CNBC, right? But then he, so the miniseries basically takes us from 1996.
MSNBC,
which at the time, in the mid-90s, that was going to be the big powerhouse because they had NBC, right, and Microsoft behind them. So they were going to be the big powerhouse in cable news, not this little silly Fox News Channel thing. So the series, each episode is 1 year in the life of Roger Ailes. It kicks off with 1996, where he launches the network within 6 months, puts it on the air, and then there's 1 year set in 2001.
His life at Fox,
okay. Roger Ailes. And Russell Crowe, much like Christian Bale as Dick Cheney, it's unrecognizable. You know, he's got the glasses and the prosthetics and everything, and is unbelievably great as Roger Ailes, because you need a larger-than-life actor to play a larger-than-life personality, man. Definitely a television genius, but the series concentrates at least as much on the personal failings and eventual downfall of Roger Ailes as it does on the successes of Fox News. And there's, if you're into, you know, the way news is created, it's fascinating to see some of the old school newsmen in the room early on, like during the 2008 campaign. If there was a rumor about Michelle Obama, Roger Ailes would just say, well, just ask it as a question. Did Michelle Obama on tape say this? That way we're getting it out there. Well, we don't have any verification. It doesn't matter. And that, of course, has continued to be a way that a lot of news channels do things.
Right.
I'm giving it 3 stars, bro. It's really well done. I think they went over the top with a lot of this stuff. They turn him into such a monster. And I'm not saying he wasn't, especially in his behavior toward a lot of women. But by doing so, there's no nuance in this. I mean, you know, it's really, really over the top. I mean, they film him as if he's Jason in a Friday the 13th movie. When Roger Ailes goes lumbering down the hall, they shoot it like a horror film. Now, you know, that's a choice that's effective, and Russell Crowe going over the top is effective. The casting is very interesting. Naomi Watts plays Gretchen Carlson.
So Gretchen Carlson wrote her own book about this.
Yes.
And it seems to me, based on, again, my limited understanding of this. It seems like they have integrated her story into this. Was her story integrated into the...
Not officially. It's based on the one book, but I know that she has endorsed and is a part of this, at least unofficially, because I've seen footage of Gretchen Carlson side by side with Naomi Watts at the premieres of the limited series. You know, they'll show them sometimes in theaters. Sienna Miller plays Beth Ailes, Roger Ailes' wife, and that's mm-hmm. really interesting. At one point, remember, they bought a small-town newspaper because she spotted like a liberal sticker on a bumper in the parking lot of a newspaper in Putnam County, and they bought the newspaper so they could turn it into a Republican rag. All fascinating stuff. We have a clip here, actually, where you can hear, this is Russell Crowe as Roger Ailes, and you'll hear Naomi Watts as Gretchen Carlson.
I run Fox News.
Anyone outside is the enemy.
We need to reclaim this country for the real Americans.
Gretchen?
Roger. I'm broadening my audience.
Well, I hired you because you're a beauty queen.
He's a bully.
I will do anything to protect my people.
You know, it's interesting. I had occasion to meet him mm-hmm. once, and I knew some of the other Fox executives. I was at the Fox News Channel for a very limited period of time in the mid 2000s, and it was about 5 years ago, and I think about it, and there was I was doing what I'd been doing at CNN, which right. is I just went over to do like commentary from here, basically. Yeah. The talk show host, you know, popping up on the screen talking about things. And Bill Hemmer, who I'd known for a gazillion years.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was on his show in the morning. And they, it went, you know, sort of haltingly for about 8 months, because what they did at Fox, which was different than my experience at any other place I'd ever done that at.
Uh-huh.
Was that they would, in the mornings, the producers would send you an email saying, here's what we want. We need exactly what you're going to say before you go on. So I would have to type up exactly what it was, write exactly what it was I was going to say, and then send it into them, and they'd go, and then that would be it. And then I'd have to remember what I said. And that was a bit of a problem.
That's not you.
No. Because
you're going to hold me to this morning?
I know. I mean, because my opinions can flip based on new information. As many listeners have known over these many years, and we have all been together. So one morning I was in, and I said, and it wasn't like I intended to mislead them. I just, there was a different, the more information had popped on a story. And so I thought, all right, well, I changed what it was.
Sure.
They said, what do you think about A? And I go, well, then like the thing. And then they were like, I was never back.
Yeah.
And because I had broken their code. And I get it. And it was, because I went, they wanted me for, the sort of the Midwest, smart ass conservative kind of thing I used to be far more conservative than I am now because Donald Trump changed all that in me.
Yeah. I think Fox News has changed a lot, too. I mean, as you mentioned, I used to go on shows in the mid-2000s, and I never had there was never a problem with what I wanted to say. That was the thing. I could say what I wanted to say. I'd go on O'Reilly's show, and he'd give you the time to give your opinion. There's some fascinating stuff about that in this miniseries, and in particular the whole fair and balanced thing, and you see Russell Crowe laughing about that, and also enjoying the news cycles during the 08 campaign, where the Obama, the birther thing like that, and just planting the seed, and then really getting involved with politics, where he'd be on the phone with Republican operatives the White House, and that, none of that can really be disputed. The stuff with the women, with his mistreatment, with his abuse, with his attacks physically and otherwise on the women is tough to watch sometimes. And listen, a lot of this stuff, a lot of women came forward very bravely and settlements were reached and he was ousted.
Right.
So, the Ailes family, and I'm sure a lot of other people will say, there's a different side to this story, but when you see it, it's what we've learned and what we're told, and it is cringe-inducing, and your heart aches for these women, not just on air, but some of the behind-the-scenes people that he would bring in, and all that stuff, give us a twirl, but much worse than that, the way he manipulated people and abused them. All of that is here in this. But it's also it's a fascinating look at the way he definitely changed television news and cable news forever.
Oh, sure, yeah.
forever. Yeah. And if the popular networks at the time, 20 years ago, had all been conservative, I think he would have just created an ultra-liberal
network. That, but he did. Yeah. That was the thing. That Air America...
Yeah.
Was not Air America. That was the radio thing.
America's Talking or America yeah. something. It's America.
That was left and right. He just wanted to do stuff that was counterbalancing. Yeah. And he wanted extremes. That was his thing. That was a conversation.
You saw the opening.
That things are, you have to be absolute. It was what talk radio was already doing. He just wanted to bring that onto the radio. I mean, onto television, cable news. All right. Fascinating. All right. So 3 stars for Loudest Voice, which starts with this weekend, right? On Showtime?
Yes.
All right, 12 episodes. All right, now we'll come back and talk about Yesterday,
yes.
Which is the strangest premise for a movie I've ever heard of in my life. Yeah. But first, Don Kleppen's going to tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the news.
Aging postal trucks catching fire, even here in the Chicago suburbs. Why are they out still delivering the mail? Rob Kahn wants to know. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
Those trucks had a good run.
Not really.
Yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away.
Okay, this movie. Explain the premise of this film, Richard Roper.
So it's set in modern times in London. A struggling musician. He's been trying for 10 years to make it. Talented kid, but just can't break through. He gets hit by a bus during a crazy global blackout that lasts 12 seconds. He wakes up. The world is exactly the same, except for the fact that no one has heard of the Beatles. And we have a scene here, a quick clip. So this is the guy, Hemish Patel plays a guy named Jack. He's out of the hospital. His friends say, oh, play us a little tune. So he plays a tune for his friends.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it seems as though they're here to stay.
Where have I heard this before?
Oh, I believe in yesterday.
All right.
When did you write that?
I didn't write it. Paul McCartney wrote it. The Beatles.
Who?
John, Paul, George and Ringo, the Beatles.
Which Beatles? Is this the insect Beatles or the car Beatles?
The pop group Beatles. Nick, help me out here.
Right, yes. There's this problem with musicians. They presume everyone else has this encyclopedic knowledge of obscure pop. In this case, the Beatles.
That's the moment he realizes. He runs to his computer, he Googles Beatles, and the Beatle shows up, the insects, and then he Googles John Paul, and Pope John Paul shows up, and he realizes the world's exactly the same. No one's ever heard of the Beatles, so as a struggling singer-songwriter, what does he do? He starts performing songs by the Beatles and becomes the world's biggest pop star, because guess what? They're really good songs. But now he's kind of made a deal with the devil. Is someone going to figure this out at some point? Are other people going to come forward who have heard of the Beatles? So it's a fascinating premise.
Yes.
And Ed Sheeran plays Ed Sheeran in here, who actually comes up to him and says, damn, I always thought I was Mozart, but I'm Salieri. You're Mozart. You're way better than I am. Although, I think you should change Hey Jude to Hey Dude, because Hey Jude just doesn't make sense. So there's all kinds of funny little touches. It's a great premise. But the problem is, it doesn't have anywhere to go. About halfway through the movie, you're like, okay, what's going to happen now? And what happens, unfortunately, I feel like kind of manipulates reality and cheats the dramatic truth. So I'm giving it 2.5 stars. The Ooh. First half is great. Because just imagine that. It's like, wait, you figured this out. No one's heard of the Beatles. I can do these songs. And he's good enough singer-songwriter to perform them, which is, perfect. But they're not his songs.
Cheated the dramatic truth.
Yes.
That is the name of my next album.
There you go.
I love that.
Painted itself into a corner from which it could not emerge.
So 2.5 stars for that.
Yes. All but right. Fascinating.
So we can leave at halftime.
You leave at halftime. Yes.
All right. Wait for it to be on... So TNT.
I'm telling you,
in 3 years.
Yes, I'm telling you today. Don't see Yesterday tomorrow. We got another movie this weekend, Rokan. That's also about an aspiring singer songwriter. This one's completely fictional. I'm pivoting right now. I'm doing the segue to Wild Rose, which is not a movie that a lot of people might have heard of, but it's getting rave reviews across the country. It is playing at some theaters, and it stars somebody named Jessie Buckley, who is on the cusp of stardom. She's an Irish actress singer. Who has amazing range. If you saw the HBO limited series Chernobyl, she played the wife of the first responder who was one of the first people literally on the scene of Chernobyl, the Russian wife who then would not take no for an answer and insist on finding out what's happening, what was happening. If you saw that, you'd think, what a fine Russian actress she is. In this movie, she plays a Scottish aspiring country and western singer, and you'd think, my goodness, this Scottish actress is terrific. She's actually Irish. She's just that good. So this is a very familiar story. She's had kind of a tough upbringing. She's a single mother or two. She just spent a year in jail. She's out of prison. She's in Glasgow, which, believe it or not, has a big country and western following. They have their own Grand Old Opry there. Not anywhere near the level of the one in Nashville, but she wants to be a country and western star. She wants to make her way to Nashville. And I think we have a little bit, and this is her actually singing and performing as well. This is Jesse Buckley in a movie called Wild Rose.
This is really her singing.
Yes.
It's interesting that they do it ambiently. They're not doing it like a soundtrack.
Yeah, we're kind of in the audience there for that particular scene. So visually, it kind of plays a little better there. But she's terrific. I'm giving the movie 3 stars because it really is. I mean, we've seen the story a million times, but they take the certain formulaic things and do some twists and turns with it, you know, because this woman does have kind of a dark past. And when she goes to Nashville, we think we know exactly what's going to happen, and it doesn't happen the way you expect it to. But it's still uplifting and inspiring, and she's just fantastic, Jesse Buckley, when you see her on stage, also in the dramatic scenes. Julie Walters plays her mom, the obligatory mom who's been raising the two kids while she's been out there gallivanting and wants her to give up her dreams, but still loves her daughter. We've seen that role a million times. Really well acted, well done. And if you're just looking for kind of a comfort movie, go with Wild Rose. It's actually better than Yesterday, even though it's probably made for 1/50th the budget and getting about 1/50th.
And that's in the theaters for now.
Yes.
You find it?
Yes. Look for Wild Rose.
All right. Very good. And then Framing John DeLorean.
Yeah, weirdest movie of the year. But I'm recommending it as well with 3 stars. So this is, you know, everybody knows the story of John DeLorean, or at least probably has heard of him. He's the guy that you know, came up. He was a General Motors hotshot executive, left the company, became like this media superstar, got plastic surgery, fixed himself up, became super handsome and dashing, went on the talk show, started dating models and actresses, and became a star in his own right.
He invented the gull wing door car, car, the DeLorean, he named after himself, of course, made famous in
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
Probably the most famous movie car of all time, right up there, if not the most famous. As usual, as in the case with his star-crossed life, the movie came out in 85, which is 2 years after they stopped making the DeLorean because the company went under. And he famously tried to finance the failing company by buying $100 million worth of cocaine in a hotel room. And it turns out the FBI had set him up, and there was a very high-profile trial because they let cameras in the courtroom. He was acquitted, actually, because it was ruled that it was pretty much entrapment. I mean, they really did. Like, people came to him and said, here's what you should do. Let's do that. I mean, so kind of amazing life. So half of the movie is documentary telling us that story. And the other half, Alec Baldwin plays Alec Baldwin playing John DeLorean. So you get scenes where Alec Baldwin's in the makeup chair, getting the hair and the makeup done, talking about John DeLorean and what happened to him. And kind of some parallels between his own life where, you know, ups and downs and run-ins with the press and kind of, you know, trying to reach a happiness later in life. And then Alec Baldwin gets up and then performs a dramatic reenactment of certain scenes from John DeLorean's life in full makeup and hair. I think we have a little of that.
He is either a beleaguered man or he was the greatest con man to ever come down the pike.
They set up an innocent man.
When does DeLorean get to a point where he could have turned back?
How far would you be willing to go to save your live stream?
Hear a little bit of Alec Baldwin there talking about John DeLorean. It's very strange, but the documentary part, I think they should have just let it be a documentary because the story itself is so incredibly intriguing and such a roller coaster. And then, you know, Alec Baldwin, who's such a great actor, but when he puts on the DeLorean makeup and hair, he really just looks like Nixon in a wig. He doesn't really look like DeLorean. He's playing a guy half his age in some of the recreations. And I do think the fact that we've seen Alec Baldwin as Donald Trump so many times, I think it gets in the way now when Alec puts on so much makeup and prosthetics to play another figure because all we could think of is comedy, comedy, comedy. And this is not supposed to be a comedy.
I don't understand this concept at all.
Framing John DeLorean. It's like as if they're framing him, but he was framed by the government, but also framing his story in a certain way.
One does have to wonder how it is that somebody paid money to make this movie.
They've been trying to make a John DeLorean movie for 25 years now, you know, with like a major
movie. Well, don't you get Leonardo DiCaprio to play him?
Yeah,
and then you do like a whole thing?
It really could be like along the lines of American Hustle or Wolf of Wall Street. And there's a movie in the pike right now. And they talk about that at the beginning of this movie about how everybody's tried to make a movie about him. So the documentary guys had the idea of, well, we'll do the fictional movie within this. Maybe not a great idea. But if you get a chance, even just go to YouTube or something, you see Alec Baldwin in the makeup playing John DeLorean. It's kind of kind of wacky. Check out Wild Rose if you get a chance, folks.
In other words, what you're telling us is avoid everything else at the theater.
Well, this is interesting. I think it's a curiosity piece, you know.
Isn't the Avengers Endgame, is the re-release this weekend?
With six extra minutes of scenes that haven't been seen before. They're trying to get to that box office record with the re-release.
And so, okay.
I don't know if I'd recognize the 6 minutes. I don't know if I'd recognize the 6 minutes. Now, if we went with Lauren, she'd know the 6 minutes that were not in the original, I think. But I don't know if I'd immediately, unless it's all 6 minutes are like one full scene, but sometimes they just sprinkle in like, you know, another reaction shot from Spider-Man. Black Panther, is that you? It is me. I am here now to help.
All right. So that movie came out 6 weeks ago, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. Again, Lauren would know the answer to that. I don't know. Nobody seems to know the answer.
Not off the top of my head.
She's busy
making reservations.
Well,
what's the day that we made the video, the Game of Thrones video?
The historic day.
That's like 8 weeks ago now. So
it was snowing on a long Saturday, it was unusual, but...
It was snowing.
So on a Tuesday... they're talking to my ear. On this weekend... Now to reissue a film, it takes 7 weeks before they go. Don't you remember when this film was out? Let's take a look at it again. Like Jaws going back in the theaters.
It was April 29th was the opening date, I believe. So that was a couple months ago, right? It's $35 million behind Avatar as the all-time worldwide box office champion. They're trying to get that extra $35 million in theatrical release so they can say they're the number one movie of all time. It's coming out on home video in less than 2 months, but this is they're saying, hey, look, here's what we're trying to do. We want to get to the box office record, so worldwide they'll probably make the $35 million over this weekend with, you know, either just, you know, discount tickets. Some people are even saying that, you know what, they should just buy up the $30 million in tickets, give them to underprivileged kids, and say, hey, you know, which is, you can do it, you can buy your own tickets and say, here they are. But I think they want to get it semi legitimately, so they're adding 6 minutes.
6 minutes. Here we go. All right. I would do an alternate ending where they all die.
This would be so fantastic.
None of them are coming back. Sorry, kids.
Well, and next week, in fact, I'm going to be in here Tuesday, Ro. We hope to see you as well since it is your show. And you're scheduled to be here on Tuesday to talk about Spider-Man Far From Home because it opens next Tuesday. That takes place right after the events of Avengers Endgame, like within weeks or months after that. So people have seen the movie, know a bunch of things happen. So the new 6 minutes of Avengers Endgame supposedly also include a little bit more kind of tying it into the upcoming Spider-Man movie.
Oh, I see.
You know, setting us up for that.
You know what I really like about Marvel? Is they have not figured out how to make money yet.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing the way they tie these things in.
All right. Let's find out from Kim Gordon what's happening in the news at the top of the hour.